Hi, today is July 25th, 2021. This is Mobius Podcast 370. I'm Todd Agassa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And we are joined today by our mutual good friend, Sven Johansson. Hey, Sven, it's been about 7 months, I think, since we last spoke on a podcast. We've spoken in between just talking, testing teams, actually. So welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I lost your audio for a little bit in there. But...
Did you? Let me make sure I've got the... Yep, I'm on the right Wi-Fi.
Just went away for a minute. Yeah, I just went away for a little bit and then came back. So.
Okay.
Happened earlier, too. Could be me.
Just before I hit the record button, we're talking about, you know, we're starting to use Microsoft Teams, John and I, for recording these podcasts in the expectation that Skype goes away one of these days. And it's been kind of interesting because it's a lot. You know, I've used Teams every day for years now on the, you know, at work in the enterprise version. And even though it's the same app that you launch, the Teams experience, if you're using it on a home account, is so vastly different that, you know, as Sven was saying earlier, it's like, it's not Teams. So do you use Teams at work, Sven, or in other?
We don't really very much. During the pandemic, the DoD threw together a kind of a DoD-wide Teams. Everybody was able to get logged into it and talk to whoever they wanted to, whether you were a unified command or your Army or your Air Force, you could find somebody. It was wonderful. And since that has gone away, it was only for the pandemic.
I see.
But each of the services is now standing up Teams. And so if you're an Air Force guy and you want to talk to an Army guy, he's got to invite you as a guest on one of his teams. And if you're a unified command guy with all the services together, it's a problem whether or not you join, you know, the Stratcom Teams tenant, or if you stay in your Air Force Teams tenant. I'm an Air Force guy, and I am a guest on DoD teams and Army teams, and they're not integrated. So it's, you know, it's worse than it was, but it's no different. You know, it's no different than if you're Boeing or Raytheon. You know, you're not totally integrated, but you can't talk. You can't talk to each other.
Right. And I've got a similar experience, except I never had a unified experience to begin with, but. You know, so for my work, we've got a Teams tenant and we're all on it and fat, dumb, and happy. But when we have to talk to other entities, including Microsoft itself, we have to, you know, hop on their tenant or they have to hop on ours. And the experience is not always seamless. One of the things we just discovered is, you know, we, as a government tenant, we finally got Whiteboard, which has been available in the commercial sector or commercial tenant for like half a year or something. And we found out that when you display a whiteboard, only the people on your tenant can see it. So
even, that kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, even authorized guests, in other words, people who have, you know, whose accounts are kind of whitelisted, authorized to come into your tenant whenever, they can't see it either. So, oh well. But this, the home version.
That may be growing pains.
Yeah. But the home version is, you know, we were talking, there's no Teams in Team. Or the home version, all you've got is chat and calendar, and that's it.
Yeah, and I was saying that I really see that there could be a use case for consumers, because for a long time I've been a scoutmaster, you know, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, whatever, and we needed to come up with some way we could talk to all the people in the scout troop, or I'm on a committee that does a Girl Scout event, and you know, six of us need to gather together occasionally, and this would be great. But I can't make a committee team or a scout troop team or a softball team in personal. All I can do is create a chat, and that chat, you know, you have to have so many different chats, it's ridiculous. Because you made one for the three of us.
Yeah.
For the three of us, and you're gonna have to you'll throw it away when you get done. Because the next time you do it with just John, it's a different chat.
Yeah.
And you can't label it really. For
we can label it. I labeled it.
Yeah, but I mean you can't label it. You can't label a Todd, John, Sven, and Frank chat.
Well,
John, Frank, and Don chat.
You can hit the pencil icon.
Yeah, you can, but I mean, it becomes like a chat in your your SMS list if you have
Yeah,
a group
and in
chat.
fact, you know, it's funny because, as you know, Sven, since you were invited to it early on, I created a Mobile Views podcast chat for everybody who's, you know, kind of not everybody, but you know, many people who've been on Mobile Views podcast as a test, you know. So we didn't invite everybody, but it's just a bunch of folks, mostly ex-MVPs, plus my buddy Paul Lawler, and just to see what it looked like. And I realized, oh, if I hit video to call everybody, it'll literally call everybody. I mean, and that's the way Teams work, but I hadn't really thought it through. I guess I should look at the
Well, and
calendar and see if that works.
it's funny to hear you talking about the great abilities of Teams in the enterprise, in that I'm in an enterprise that's still trying to figure out how to use Teams. You know, academia lags much behind, even though Teams has been out for about 2 years in our group. It's really only been in the last, I'd say, 3 months that people have
Yeah.
started to take notice of it and maybe think it could be useful. So we shall see. It's just the great possibilities that you speak of, I think others have not even begun to think about them. So maybe if they're getting the personal version of Teams, they don't realize how much they're missing.
Oh, absolutely. If you start with Microsoft Teams, you know, the Home Office Edition, whatever it's called, it's not even one tenth of what Teams provides you in the enterprise version. It is so stripped down. I think Sven before the podcast called it, you know, Skype with a Teams label on it or something. It's a little bit better than Skype. You know, I think the audio quality is much better for one thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
You know, the podcast cheat sheet you got up here for on Google Word, you could have that right in Teams, you know.
That's right. I could put it in
Not in
files, couldn't I?
personal. Not in
Yeah.
personal,
Yeah,
but
there
in
is a file for the chat, so in theory I could have uploaded it to here, but yeah, it'd be, you know, the one advantage of Google Docs file system. Well, let's see, is that true for OneDrive? I guess I could put it in OneDrive, where I actually have much more space. I've got a terabyte there versus, you know, 100, 118 gigabytes or some weird number in Google Drive. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Teams become more team-like in the personal space, especially as I approach retirement, because I really want to miss some of the features that's available in the enterprise version of Teams when I no longer have access to it.
Well, it actually doesn't cost you that much. It's like
No.
$12 a month per person. You can be an enterprise of one.
Yeah.
And I have that. I have an Office 365 business subscription. It's 12 bucks a month.
Ah.
And it gives you Teams and all that stuff and the OneDrive storage, and it gives you Exchange, and you know, it does all the same stuff that Office Home and
Yeah.
Personal do, and a full version of Teams.
Does it give you a custom domain
No,
for
it
email?
doesn't, but you can tie to it very easily.
Okay.
And they're in bed with Microsoft's in bed with GoDaddy. So
Ew.
if you use GoDaddy,
Yeah.
it's trivial. You just say, I have a domain with GoDaddy, you know, todd@todd.com. Boom, it's
Right.
done. It's
Wow.
done.
Okay. All right. So there's kind of a mini rant, but also an appreciation for Teams, I think, especially the enterprise version, which Sven and I like. And John's team is discovering
Yes, slowly,
now. Yeah.
It
Slowly and painfully.
is a matter of everybody getting on board with it
It
and
is.
using it. You know, if you're
It
just using it
is.
by yourself, it's eh.
Yeah.
But
It's Microsoft you at that point.
yeah.
No people, no team, just you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny though. The last thing I'll say on this topic before we move on to something else is when the pandemic began in earnest and we were all sent home, I remember, you know, people sort of grabbing their notebooks and cleaning up their desks and taking things with them that they needed to do work at home with. And people were kind of talking to each other, goes, "Hey, what's your cell number so I can reach you, you know, for this to collaborate, blah, blah, blah." And I just, as I wandered around, you know, talking to people maskless, because we didn't have a mask mandate yet, we didn't know what we were doing. I remember telling just bunches of people, don't trade cell phone numbers, just use Teams. You know, just if you don't mind, and people can't be forced to, if you don't mind put it on your phone. If not, you already have a new notebook that you're taking home with you, so just use Teams to call each other. And that's the way we should do it. And you know, I'm not sure how many people actually listen to me. and traded numbers anyway, which is okay. That's not a big deal. But that turned out to be a really good general direction, you know, just saying, just use Teams. And now that we have Teams calling, it's even better because we can actually call people, you know, on a regular phone now, and they can call us right into Teams without, you know, switching headsets or anything. So it's awesome.
Yeah, when you started this call, it came up on my iPhone here as well as my desktop.
So. Yep.
So I could
When people call me, my iPad rings, my phone rings, my, you know, my notebook, if it's on, rings. It's quite a production. Okay. Yeah. So the next topic is kind of sad, and that's the dead and soon to die Google services list. You know, John and I have been following this for years in various forms, but what shouldn't surprise me, but did, is even more Google services are going to die soon. So Google Bookmarks, I don't know if you guys ever, I used to use Google Bookmarks a lot. Google mm-hmm. Bookmarks is going to die end of September. Now, it turns out I haven't bookmarked anything since 2016, so obviously I haven't used it in a while. But I thought, you know, self, you might want some of those bookmarks someday. So fortunately, Google being Google, it has an easy way to export it in an HTML file, so I did that last night. But you might want to go to killedbygoogle.com and see if any of your favorite services are soon to die. Like, you know, Google Book, not favorite exactly, but something I did use quite a bit and wanted to preserve the data. So killedbygoogle.com, I'll put the link in the show notes. And I should also note that, you know, Google Cloud Print died end of 2020. And I hadn't really thought about it, but man, it really messed up my printing for my Chromebook.
Yeah, that is kind of depressing because I had just thought about that the other day thinking, oh, that would be a perfect use scenario for Cloud Print. So I'm glad I didn't try to do it because I would have been disappointed, but Google. Well, I'm actually in Google bookmarks right now looking to see when the last time I bookmarked anything, and I don't have anything new since 2010, but I think I'll export these just in case.
Right.
They are a bunch of things that were very useful to me for a long time, so maybe it'll give me some nostalgia going back through them.
Yeah, and half the bookmarks are probably go to dead links, but that's okay, right? It's an archaeology dig at this point.
Yes.
So is that something different than just favorites on their browser or the?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Because that's what I was thinking is bookmarks is on a browser. And
how is that going away? Remember when Google had their own customizable homepage and you could have little widgets on the sides? And I used that for a number of years. And Google Bookmarks was one of those widgets that you could embed. Along with news items and stuff like that. Yeah, the last, some of the last bookmarks I have on there are the iPhone Dev Team blog when that was relatively a new thing. Something about the Nexus One. Just a bunch of random stuff that was so immediately important 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I never really used Chrome or Google products, so very much anyway. I have them around.
Yeah. But I'm surprised.
I don't put Chrome on my stuff. So. I don't put Chrome on my stuff.
Interesting.
Other than stuff that runs Chromium.
Right, like Edge now. Yeah. Okay. Next up is something I have not tried, but I thought John might find useful, or not maybe useful, interesting. Because, you know, we've been talking about Evernote for years. We used to use Evernote, not very long. Jay Stone and some of my other friends and I used Evernote for a long time to share our notes, but it became so clunky that I switched to Google Docs fairly early on in the podcast. And but there's something called MIDI Note, M-I-D-I Note, you know, like the musical MIDI, I guess. I'm not sure why it's called that. I didn't read it. MIDINote.me. And I found it interesting because it's in beta, so it's not a production release, but it tags everything, which, you know, is like most things do, but it can apparently create a mind map based on those tags, or will soon be able to. I'm not sure if it does it already, but I found that to be a really interesting idea because, you know, you guys might remember tag clouds, which were a big deal in blogs and stuff years and years and years ago, and then nobody really cares about it anymore.
Yeah, I remember them Microsoft briefings.
cough. And anyway, so I found that interesting because I like mind maps. I don't use it as much as I should. I've bought several products. What's the one I use the most? I can't remember. But anyway, there's a couple I use that, or there's one I use that I really, I think it's iThoughts. Is that it? That might be it. That I have used at time has been very helpful. And I thought, you know, if somebody could mind map my notes, that would be fantastic. So I'm going to take a look at it, see what the beta looks like, see how to sign up. I don't know if, I can't remember if there's pricing or anything like that. I know you guys are pretty happy with OneNote, so it might not be as interesting to you. But there you go. If you're looking for another note system that looks kind of interesting. I guess it's based in China. I'm just kind of looking right. It could be either. Yeah, I think it's Chinese.
Uh-oh. Everything goes through servers in Beijing.
Where it's automatically backed up that you don't know about it being backed up, but it's automatically backed up for someone else.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, it's like for years on phone calls and things, I used to say, hey, NSA, could you record this call in case I need it later? You know, I kept hoping they would monetize themselves so you could.
And say, so you know, just practice that in Mandarin.
My Mandarin's horrible. I tried to learn once, by the way. But anyway, if you go to the blog, I guess, for it, it shows you some sample mind maps, which look pretty darn good, in my opinion. Also, a bubble view, a bubble map, which is also kind of not as useful as a mind map, I think, but it's sort of an interesting way to, you know, organize your thoughts. And I'm looking forward to learning more about it in the near future. Okay. All right.
I'm just always afraid with a mind map, I'll wind up at dead ends.
Well, that's the idea, right? You have to come to an end of a
mind map. I'd say you were afraid you'd wind up in someone else's mind, you know.
Okay.
I've got too far off the edges.
I've got a mini rant at the end, but anyway, I wanted to check in with you guys. What's new? Especially you, Sven. I haven't heard from you in a while in terms of just chatting on the podcast. I think you're muted. No, there you are.
Yeah, I was. I was figuring you were going to do your rant.
I'll do it at the end.
No, I was a couple of things that I put on here just for grins. The new Apple MagSafe battery pack that just came out. You know, when it was announced, I thought, you know, that might be interesting for fun. But I do already have, and this, I got this a long time ago. It's a MagSafe battery pack. It just slaps on the back of my iPhone. And you know, I don't even remember anymore. It was something that came up in Facebook, which I normally don't do stuff with, but it looked pretty decent. So, and it had a couple of neat features, and I figured I'd spend the $50 and you know, it's kind of like going to Vegas or something. You put out $50 and you may get something back. You may not. But it actually works pretty well. And I know, and this has been quite some time ago, but now Anker and some of the other big companies have made packs, and Apple has now made their own, which seems to be, you know, twice the price and a third the capacity, you know, which I don't quite understand, but.
Well, I'll jump in and say why I bought one. And this was, so you sort of hit on a little bit when you said it's like, you know, put out $50, see what you get. MagSafe, with Apple's new incarnation of it in the last year, fairly being young, one concern I did have was I want something that would be reliable, because I wasn't going to take multiple external batteries with me. This was one I wanted to slip in my pocket. So it's obviously, if it breaks down, I can take it to an Apple store and say, hey, this thing, you know, broke down, I want it replaced or something. Especially if I'm traveling, which is when I would mostly use this. The other one was I did want to see the reverse charging and see how Apple was implementing that and play around with it. So it does work as advertised, and it's nice to have that option. It also is nice that it will charge off of a key charger by itself if you want it to. It will not charge off a MagSafe charger, though, because the magnets do not align properly for that. But it'll charge off of key. And honestly, I wanted to just sort of look at how Apple was going to do it. And it's a little slimmer because it is only that 90% capacity. It is a little slimmer than these giant packs that people are putting on the back. And since I already use the MagSafe wallet, it's really about the same size, just a tiny bit thicker than the MagSafe wallet. So I'm already used to having something on the back there. That is Sven's holding up his. Mine's a tiny bit thinner, but not much. It's about almost the same dimensions.
How much is the Apple version if Sven's is 50?
$99.
Okay. So, like you said, it's twice the cost and half the capacity or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I have not really used MagSafe. My MagSafe case cracked. My Apple branded MagSafe case cracked for whatever reason. And my phone itself is fine, so I'm not sure why it cracked. So I bought a, $11 case that I guess MagSafe works. It doesn't have the little aiming thing, so you got to kind of slide it around to make sure it, connects to the MagSafe adapter. Haven't really used it. And, I'm going to ask Sven this question because I'm old, and he's answered this before, and I can't remember his response. As the electrical engineer in this group of three, do you feel comfortable using these induction chargers that heat up? I mean, basically they generate heat, right? Because that's part of the inefficiency of it, of any charging system. Does the heat worry you at all, or is that
it really doesn't. I don't think it's a significant issue. I mean, we've been doing inductive electricity transfer forever. It's called a transformer. These are just, instead of two coils wrapped around each other,
right.
You got two coils stuffed against each other. It's a transformer. So, and you're going to get a little bit of heat out of that, but I don't think you're going to get much more. I'm really more concerned about the guys that are, putting car batteries and trying to charge their iPhone with it because it's faster. I got 1800 watts coming out of this car battery, but so I should be able to charge in seconds. But I don't have a problem with that. Now, certainly anything you get good quality stuff, which Apple builds, and you got less quality stuff, which is probably what I bought here. But since it's a no-name, it's a no-name Chinese thing.
Yeah.
It's you could probably buy the same thing with labeled Anker.
Yeah.
But I don't think the other thing that the differences between Apple's and it's absolutely not a slam dunk which way you go is Apple's, of course, is Lightning charging. So you do have that option of charging either the pack or the phone when they're stuck together. Either way, it'll work. Mine's USB-C, which makes sense if you got a lot of new Apple stuff, which is all USB-C, the iPads and the MacBooks and stuff. So that has an advantage. I was really interested in the reverse charging, charging the battery pack from the iPhone. That implies that inverse charging from the iPhone is possible. So I'm waiting for the $69 AirPort charging case, which will charge off the back of my iPhone, because it'll be a new case, because it'll have to tell the phone charge me.
But
it's capable, and it'll be $69. So there's a lot of benefits to the iPhone one. I mean, the battery widget in the iPhone tells you what the battery charges in your pack. Doesn't on mine. I have to look at the lights on it. But no reason not to get the Apple one.
Different topic. The ability to see battery charge percentages on iPhone is really, really useful. Android just started picking it up on it recently. And but not all devices report their battery charge level. Like my keyboards, my Bluetooth keyboards don't, whereas my Bluetooth headsets do. So it's a little bit hit and miss, more hit than miss. But I wish everything would report battery levels correctly. And some things report battery levels when they don't have to. Like I've got an old car, so I stuck in a Bluetooth to FM radio. I mean, like I know Dinosaur, but that's the car I got. So I've got a Bluetooth to FM radio so I can hear podcasts and things on my car speakers when I'm driving. And it plugs into what used to be called a cigarette lighter, which is now, I guess, called a charger port because it doesn't actually light cigarettes anymore. Yeah, accessory port. And it always reports that the Bluetooth to FM is at 100% because, it's plugged in, right? It's got no battery. But maybe it does, because it does return the FM. What do you think? It's probably just a capacitor, not a battery in there, because I don't see any battery. But it does hold the FM, whatever FM station I have it set to, broadcast to in the car. Okay, who mentioned the iPad mini refresh rumor? Is that you, John?
No, that was me. That was
That was
me
you,
too.
Sven? Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting more excited all the time. They're almost saying that it's a done deal. It's happening. It's in the fall. You know,
Yeah.
they're a little bit wavery about what exactly it's going to be, but it's coming. And I'm hoping, I got my fingers crossed, it's a mini iPad
Yeah.
new one. You know, square sides, touch ID
Right.
on the on button,
Yeah.
slim bezels. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. I
It's
actually kind of want the facial recognition instead of touch ID. It's so, okay.
I do too, but I don't think
Yeah.
that'll add another $50 to $75 a cost, and I don't
I
think they're going to do
going to say, I wish they would put back touch ID on my phone, although unlocking it with my watch has been, pretty reliable. But yeah, I'm looking forward to whatever the new iPad mini is too. Some people are saying it's the iPad mini Pro. Some people are saying it's iPad Pro mini. Some people are saying it's, not coming.
that. Yeah, and I'm waiting to see if I'm going to be severely tempted by it, because that's where I've sort of been for the last year, is if a really great iPad mini came out that had Apple Pencil 2 support and all that, would I be tempted to go back to having two iPads? And it's possible. It really is. So I'm gonna have a difficult decision if what the rumors, the most enthusiastic rumors say, if they come out to be true.
I think it might be easier for you if the one of the rumors is that it's going to greatly reduce the bezel size and therefore, increase the display area without increasing the size of the device. So if that's true, if it goes from, I think we've got 7.9 inch displays now, if it goes to say 9, which is almost, regular iPad size. At least the early iPads are 9.7. I think it's going to be a slam dunk. I mean, you're going to have a nice big screen in a nice small form factor. I'm looking forward to it. I love my iPad Mini 5. I carry it everywhere. And I need to replace my daughter's iPad Mini 4. She's been very hesitant to replace her 4 for some reason, but I think it's about time to replace that if a 6 or Pro or whatever they call it comes out. And you bought a new Windows PC too, or is that a Yeah, it must be a Windows PC.
Yeah, it's a Windows
Yeah.
PC. If I'm going to slide over and grab it here, it's for.
Okie dokie. So what Sven is going to grab is a Dell 16-inch Inspiron, 2-in-1 with pen and pen storage. Pen storage is important.
That's one of the things. I was looking for a little bit bigger Windows machine. I was looking for a 2-in-1,
Yeah.
something that had touch screen, good pen on it, because sometimes I need to mark stuff up and it's easier. And this thing, it's looks like that. Where'd I go? Oh, that's interesting. Let me
Yeah.
turn the background filtering off, and you can actually might be able to see this thing.
Right.
It wants the gallery.
Yeah. Teams does a
Gallery.
good job of
Background effects. Turn off.
putting a virtual background on everything but you.
Wall.
I'm interested
There
how
you
it does
go.
that. There you go.
Now you can
That's
see
a
it.
big screen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good size
That's a big
screen.
touchpad.
Yeah, and it's got full numeric, but right here,
Oh yeah.
so
Huh.
it looks a
That's not
lot
where I
like,
thought it would be. So his pen holder is in between the top of the keyboard. Well, it's at the top of the keyboard in the
it's at the
slot,
top of the keyboard,
just below the screen itself.
and you can't
Huh.
quite see it if you close it,
Yeah. Ooh, that's
but
pretty
if you
secure.
do the whole But if you
Two
do
and
the whole
one.
flip over,
Yeah.
it's
Right at
right
the
there
top.
to be able to pull out. You can write on it.
That's very handy.
Yeah, it's if you're familiar with Surface Pro X, their ARM Surface.
No, the last Pro I used was Surface Pro 4, so I've not seen anything since then.
Excuse me. Yeah, they have an ARM-based Surface Pro X, and it has a keyboard that has a slim pin, and it fits right about the same spot. Right at the top of the keyboard, and I think that's something that has got to happen if people are going to use them, because nobody has shirt pockets anymore, pocket protectors,
Very true.
tips are stylus.
I still have a
So
pocket protector, but anyway.
yeah, I still have my Microsoft pocket protector. I think I have
So is this going to be your Windows 11 test machine, or did you just happen to need a new
No,
laptop?
I just need a new one. So there's my.
Oh yeah, I never had one of those.
Oh, that's my MVP pocket protector.
How come I didn't get one? Did you get one, John?
Nope. I don't have one. I'm not that big a geek.
Special.
You bring up an interesting point, though. While we're waiting for Swen to come back, this is a very, very quick story, but it's a weird story to think about. I have a little tablet bag that I found on eBay about 4 years ago that's got the Apple logo silk screened onto it.
Okay.
And it's one of my favorite tablet cases because it's got a big main pocket, a back pocket. It's got two side pockets that zip. It's a very nice, and it's got a long strap that you can use that goes across body. And I've never been able to figure out who made it, when it was made, why it was made, etc. It's very similar to what Sven's holding up, but it's not exactly that same one. Because this one's horizontally oriented. Sven's is more vertically oriented.
Yeah.
So a couple of months ago, I was out somewhere, and one of my friends saw it and said, oh, that's a really nice tablet case. I said, yeah, I said, I use it, you know, when I have to bum around campus, and I don't want to carry my whole laptop everywhere. And she goes, it looks like the bags they used to give to geniuses at the Genius Bar on Apple stores.
Ah.
And it hit me, that's probably where it came from. It probably was an internal only piece of, you know, for geniuses or whatever. So I've actually started an eBay safe search for, you know, Apple employee stuff just to see what comes up on there, things other than shirts, because of course you can get 1,000 shirts that they've used. But it is curious to see what gets branded in any given corporation. You can do this with Microsoft or anywhere else and gets given away. With the Apple case, it's a lot of old lapel pins from the various things that they've launched over the years, a lot of things from the 80s and 90s. So something you might not have ever thought to look up, but if you want, you can probably find some pretty cool vintage tech stuff for your favorite companies looking on eBay.
Nice. And I just realized I've been on the wrong camera this whole time. Let's switch cameras. There we go.
Oh, that's terrific. Okay. Yeah. I like the other one. But the one thing I thought was nice about this laptop was that it had decent pen storage and it's still a thin laptop. I mean, way back in the day when an XP tablet edition came out, the things were an inch thick. There was no problem putting a pen silo in there.
Yeah.
Now that everybody wants, you know, a paper thin laptop, where do you put a stylus? You know, so the first thing you do is buy one and then lose it and buy another one and lose it.
Yep.
But so this was really interesting to me. So
not a stylus story, but I have been fighting the urge to buy another Windows laptop, you know, personal, you know, spend my personal hard earned cash. And I've been looking at I think it's Asus ZenBook Duo, which was supposed to have a $1,000 version, which was the one I was thinking about buying, but I can't find anything less than $1,499 or something like that. So that breaks my piggy bank and, you know, for things that just go by.
This thing was about $12, I think.
Yeah. But have you taken a look at the ZenBook Duo? It has the little screen, second screen, right above the keyboard.
Yeah, I've seen it. I don't know. What I was really looking for something was a bigger screen keypad and stuff.
I thought it started raining behind me.
Number pad. Yeah, and I needed something with pen. I mean, I do maps and stuff for Girl Scouts and stuff, and it's difficult to do on a desktop with a mouse trying to draw on a.
Oh, I hear you.
Something. And so, it's okay. It's fine to do on an iPad or something like that, but it's small then. So having, being able to draw on a 16-inch screen, you know, be able to see everything.
Yeah. If you have to use a desktop, by the way, I bought a one by Wacom.
Yeah.
Which is like $70. It's really cheap.
It's still, you got your hand off the side drawing on something that you're drawing on.
Right. So this is a very 1980s kind of experience.
Yeah.
But it's $70.
So
I was okay with that. All right.
It'd be interesting if you could use a pencil too on an Apple touchpad. You know?
So what kind of memory and storage and all that did you get with it?
It's an i7, 16 gig of RAM, terabyte of storage.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Is it hard drive or is it SSD?
I think it's an SSD.
Really?
I didn't
terabyte? Look.
It's good thin price. Enough. It probably is. Yeah, it's an Inspiron, which is not Dell's highest end.
Right, Inspiron is the consumer version,
next
right?
down, yeah. XPS would be, but surprisingly, they don't have a 16-inch XPS 2 in
there. Yeah.
They have 16-inch XPSs, but they're laptops. I didn't need that. I wanted something I could fold over like a tablet.
Yeah. So do you have a rant next? I see something that says iMessage versus RCS versus SMS. Sounds like a rant.
Yeah, it does sound like one, but it's sort of that way. But I don't know if you've kept up lately. Google is kind of not beating up, but calling out Apple to use RCS.
Right.
You know, the rich communication service. Well, it possibly could. And they keep saying that, you know, what's going to happen here shortly is everybody who's using an iPhone, if they're talking to somebody that doesn't have one, it's totally insecure because it falls back to SMS, which it always has.
Yeah.
Then they say RCS is secure by default. And I looked it up because I didn't believe it. And it's not. The RCS specification is not secure by default. Google has put an extension on it that makes it secure point to point. Just point to point, not group, point to point. And they're rolling it out. It's not like it's here. And the now T-Mobile and Verizon and AT&T have all bought into to supporting it. Yeah. So you do have to have carrier support as well. But so as long as you are doing point to point, the other thing that if you look at Wikipedia on RCS, it says it is a standard that was intended to replace SMS. So if it's the standard that's intended to replace SMS, I can't see why Apple wouldn't fall back to the normal text standard, which will be RCS at some point.
Yeah.
That would make sense to me. Then you could still have iMessage do what it does. If right. the other people are Android or whatever, fall back to RCS. But RCS is only secure by default if you're using the Google extension.
Right.
Google Messages.
Well, yeah.
So Google companies, Samsung, places like that, are putting Google Messages on.
Yeah. Well, you know, Apple has to have its blue bubbles and green bubbles, so they're never going to totally embrace it because, you know, we all want to be blue bubble people. Like, we don't want to be.
We'll have red bubbles for RCS. And, you know. That'll just turn off everyone to it. Because Apple also has the gray bubble, which is when you're talking to a verified company. So, for example, the other day I was chatting with the Apple Card support that goes through Goldman Sachs, and that's a gray bubble. And if you're talking to Apple themselves, they're gray bubbles.
I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have used Apple's tech support, you know, via SMS. And I never noticed the color.
Yeah. I'll turn off my background. You can see. And it also has a little verified check mark so that you know that you're actually talking to, you know, whoever you are supposedly talking to.
Right. It is gray.
Yeah.
How about that?
And then in your messages list, you'll actually see the little check mark next to the group and the icon and all that.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I haven't understood, if you look at the front of your home pages, the icon for iMessage is green. Why is it green? Yes. Well, why wouldn't it be blue? Why wouldn't it be blue?
Yeah.
So you know what it, you know. So
Jumped back and forth, though, if I remember right. Over the last few years, Apple's been bouncing back and forth between green, blue, with the different operating systems. Because I want to say the last generation, it was blue again.
Was it? I always have trouble remembering which is the good bubble and which is the bad because the icon is green. So I figured it's, you know, green should be good. No.
All right. Now, what is Streaks?
That was mine.
Oh, that was yours.
So, yeah, Streaks is an app that I've talked about in the past. It's basically, I use it as my daily to-do list. The idea is it's a habit-forming app. You can decide, you know, what do you want to remind yourself to do every day? So I have a whole bunch of these little things, everything from a daily journal entry to practice this or record this or that or check this email box, just whatever I have to do every day that isn't immediately pushed to me. And they recently, so it used to be that you could only have 2 pages of things to track. And they were very adamant that the whole reason for this limit of 12 items was that that would actually help you create habits and you would not, I say we, it's an individual developer. So they is not probably the appropriate pronoun. It's probably he. But he was very adamant that, you know, this was a targeted sort of thing. And once you, you know, I guess graduated from the streak, you could get rid of an old one and put a new one in. But recently, they've now updated to 24 possible things you can track. So they've gone 4 pages. And I like this app, and I recommend it to people who are looking to try to do some habit forming stuff, habit creation stuff. It also keeps all of your, you know, different statistics and all that, how often you hit the streak, those things. You can go back and edit the streak if for some reason you do something one day, but it doesn't get recorded, that sort of thing. So it's low pressure. There's no competition with yourself or anyone else. It's just for your own tracking. And one thing that's really nice is they allow you to put an action button on there. So if you know the callback URL for what you want to do on your phone, you can have it right there and right from the Streaks app, go do it and then come back and mark it complete. So if anyone's a Streaks user, you now have 2 more pages you can fill up. And if you're not a Streaks user, it's something to check out.
And I do notice I'm looking at it now in the App Store, and it is an Apple's Editor Choice app with a 4.8 rating with 17,000 people rating it. So it's highly regarded. Just scrolling.
The same developer also has Streaks Workouts, which is an interesting variant of it. You basically tell Streaks Workouts the certain exercises you like to do or you can do in some of our cases, and it will then build a workout for you however long you tell it. So if you say, give me a 6-minute workout or a 12-minute workout, it'll just randomly choose from those things and announce it, and you do it, and then it keeps track of that. So that's kind of a cool variant of the whole idea. And you could then set up a streak to do your Streaks workouts. Cool. And since I'm plugging the same developer, he also has a watch app called Health Face, which basically allows you to put different health widgets on your Apple Watch faces. And it's 10 times more configurable than anything Apple offers. And nicely, it offers a analog clock digital readout for the time. So if you're one of those people that you wish Apple would allow you to have a complication that would do the digital time around the inside of an analog watch face, Health Face allows that. And then you can also pair it with a health, widget as well.
Cool. And I have to correct myself, by the way, I just happened to look at the device settings for, you know, for Teams that we're on right now. And I thought it didn't have noise suppression like the enterprise service does, but it does. And it's set to auto as by default. So hopefully you can't hear the dog barking in the background. I'm not sure whose dog that is. It's my neighbor's dogs are pretty well behaved. So I'm going to go back and check after the podcast to see if there's a dog loose somewhere.
It's your bunny rabbits. They're doing it to imitate something else and get your attention.
Okay. And now on to my rant.
Yeah, I just opened up that noise suppression thing, and the auto is, I'm not sure what it picks, but it's got, below that, it's high, low, and off.
Yeah.
So, because I can hear the dog just fine. So I don't know if high would be a better setting.
Yeah. But in any case, so, you know, a couple of, maybe, when did I do it? Today is the 20th, so 10 days ago, I got a message on my iOS devices only, iPad and iPhone, saying that I had a certificate that was not trusted because it had just expired on July 15th. And it was from the 2011 MVP Summit. I think we all three of us were there. And I didn't think anything about it. Okay, fine. It's 10 years old. The certificate expired and it'll probably not bother me again, or I can go in and delete it. Well, it pops up every day, several times a day on all my iOS devices now, saying cannot verify server identity. Sure, because the certs expired. But the thing, the rant is this. So this should be easy to fix. This should be, I go into I don't know, privacy, security, or whatever, wherever the certs live, and look at the list of certs and delete this expired one. But I can't find it anywhere. I can find other certs. I have a, you know, like my ISP has a bunch of hotspots around town, and I have a cert for it that I can see, and if I wanted to delete, but I cannot find this cert anywhere on my phone or iPad. It is driving me nuts. Did a soft reset. I actually did the upgrade to iOS. What are we on now? Whatever the latest update that just came out in the last week, 14.7, upgraded to 14.7. So, you know, and it just keeps popping up day after day. It's not constant. So it's, you know, annoying, but not super annoying. But if any of our fives of listeners have an idea where this mystery cert lives and I can delete it, that would be awesome. Because I've been, like I said, I went to the usual places where certs live and it ain't there. That's my rant. Weird, hidden.
Well, I have something that I compare onto it that is, you have a rant about something you can't find. I have a rant about something I found that I didn't even know existed. Yeah. I mentioned that, I believe I mentioned my wife has started using a MacBook recently, and she asked me about Finder. And of course, on Windows, folders are sorted at the top of the Windows Explorer menu, and on a Mac, they typically get sorted in line with files. And so I went digging through Finder preferences, which I never look through because why would I? I have Finder the way I like it. And there actually is a way now to keep folders on top in Windows when sorting by name, which I never even knew existed. It probably got slipped in there at some point in the last 10 years. But the irony is I turned it on and I don't like it. So I turned it back off. I've gotten very used to, you know, if I'm looking for something alphabetically, I scroll to the bottom of the list, whether it's a folder or an item. So it's a good example of how our abilities with operating systems change over our time with them familiarity wise. Yeah, if you're one of those people that recently switched over to a Mac from Windows and you really get annoyed, I thought I still got annoyed by the fact the folders were all throughout, but apparently I like it now. But if you really do legitimately get annoyed by that, you can go into Finder Preferences, the Advanced tab, and tap the In Windows When Sorting by Name under Keep Folders on Top.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of funny, the things we get used to or we don't care about after a while, like years and years and years of thinking we can't change something. That's a good one.
Nothing helps you accept reality like not being able to change it. You know? Yeah. And I've just ruined a lot of people who thought they were happy. Now they know they can change it, and I've probably just ruined their lives. I apologize.
You know, just thinking, I forget, is it Marty Seligman? Well, he became kind of a self-help guru in addition to his academic work. And isn't he the guy who said that, change the things you can and don't worry about what you can't change kind of thing. I just stopped worrying about stuff I can't
universal change. Truism, but yeah, that's along the right lines from years and years since. Yeah.
That was a God grant me thing. You know, God grant me the strength to change the things I can, the patience to accept the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference.
There you go. That's a good old one. Yeah. All righty. Yeah. And with those words of wisdom, we will bring podcast number 370 close. Hey, Swin, thanks for joining us and testing our first three-person Microsoft Teams podcast recording. You know, one of the things that, by the way, John, if you use since you're starting to use the enterprise version, one of the things you can't use Teams for the personal service is you can't record a meeting. In Teams for Enterprise, you can record the whole meeting, you know, video and everything, and export it. And I don't have it turned on my government tenant yet, but I'm waiting for the ability to save live transcription. So you can already turn on live transcription in Teams for Enterprise, where it tells you who's saying what, you know, it types out, it does a speech to text. Live transcription saving will let you save it to like a Word doc with attribution for this, you know, for each speaker. So you know who said what, as, you know, kind of a near verbatim meeting notes with, you know, obviously with errors and stuff, but it really helps with the note taking, in my opinion. Okay.
Yeah, and they do have, you know, some of the things you see from Microsoft ads and descriptions and stuff. They have, you know, a Teams meeting room kind of thing where you can have five people like you normally have in a conference room, mm-hmm. and then a big screen for the other end and a microphone set up in the middle of the table. And this system will then set up and will recognize who's talking and display that at the other end. So you know who it is that's saying something, as opposed to having trying to watch people's mouths over the
right.
video.
Right.
And for transcription as well.
Especially if you don't know who it is.
Yeah, if it might not be on the camera, or some people you don't know who they are. It's the first time you've ever been in a meeting. So,
yeah.
There's some really helpful stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Podcast 370 comes to an end.